Hello, and you're listening to The Seventh Reel. This week, Modern Times, a 1936 silent film directed by Charlie Chaplin, and The Immigrant, a 1917 short film, also directed by Charlie Chaplin. Michelle, this was your pick this week. Would you mind elaborating?
Wow, it was Chaplin Day the other day, 16th of April. And these are both kind of more political films of his. Like, I'm pretty sure The Immigrant is one of his first more, like, politically minded films, where Modern Times, he's kind of in full swing of the... I mean, he goes more out for Modern Times, and then The Great Dictator afterwards. But, yes, what did you think?
Yeah, I love them. I actually loved both of them, but it's so weird. For me, what kind of resonated more was The Immigrant. But maybe it's just for me. I don't know about you guys. I found it to be like a bit more charming. Maybe it's because of the, you know, it's mainly about him trying to, you know, impress the girl. But Modern Times has the same thing, but she's like this like kind of scrappy, you know.
she has more agency and she does more.
She has more agency than probably any of his female characters.
Yes.
What did they call her in the movie? They said she was something.
The gammon.
I like that. I'm going to use that more. The last, what I thought was so cool about The Immigrant was they made a whole bit about him trying to get out of paying the bill. And that, and there's so many variations of that joke. I could not believe how many gags that he squeezed in, how many setups that he squeezed in. Just with him sitting at the table trying to get out of
and then like the coin falling from the guy's foot and then he's pressed on it.
Yeah,
that actually like was a great lesson in like suspense. Like he's just like it's so simple.
Yes, and at one point when he started praying, I just started laughing. It's so funny when he started praying. It feels so realistic and yet so like it's so cartoonish, but his reactions are so grounded in, I don't know, like this. It's very universal, I suppose. Like, anybody can watch this. Like, you can be from any creed, race, or religion, and you can watch this and go, oh, yeah, I get it. Like, I get what this guy's going through.
Well, that's always what he wanted.
Well, it makes sense because, I mean, he is, like, universally, you know, beloved, and, like, even people know his name, like, here, like, in Egypt, so... Like, and he's, like, a figure that's still from the 1936, these movies are still like things that people remember.
What I liked was like, oh, things haven't really changed that much. I think like the struggle, humanity struggle has consistently remained the same, I feel. No matter, this is Modern Times when he made it, but even now, you know, it still feels quite modern. In fact, it feels even more modern because there are some moments where it borders on science fiction, where in beginning in the factory where there's like surveillance, where the boss is watching the workers through like video surveillance. That, he called that. That's essentially...
Yeah, 4 years before 1984 came out.
Damn it. Or else saw this, like, oh, I got it.
But, you know, the most, like, dystopic parts were, to me, the section where they're trying to manage to make them be productive while they're having lunch. Like, as funny as that was, I was like, oh man, that is dark.
And we are probably getting there one day. We'll get there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we did. That Soylent thing. Have you ever tried that before? Mike was obsessed with it for a while. It blew my mind that people were willing to drink it. It tastes like cardboard.
It's got everything
that you're supposed to be for nutrition. You can just drink it. It's like, oh, that's food. It's supposed to replace food. But it tastes like cardboard. It's disgusting. Like, we're drinking the little... Oh, my God. It's like in The Matrix, where they're outside The Matrix and they're eating the slop. But we turned that into, like, a legitimate thing that we consume. Oh, crazy. It is pretty dystopic, and...
I mean, it was made because... There's a documentary called Chaplin in Bali, where he went to Bali, I think, in, like, 1933 or something like that. And he just could not believe, like, the difference of society, that it wasn't just completely fueled by, like, men being productive machines that are gonna, like, provide every whatever. And he just wanted, like, that's why he was a communist, because he just wanted people to be treated equally, get paid properly, and all this stuff. And it's still like, and yet he was a demon for being a communist.
Ostracized. But,
like, it's just...
It's kind of insane, because I feel like maybe I'm completely misreading this, but he himself is like kind of a slave to his work ethic, and I, reading the background on how this movie was produced, it's kind of insane. Like, the guy just obviously labored over these things with, you know, all his energy, but it feels like he's working through something as well, like going like, well, what is this instinct, and is it just a society that's like forcing me to be this like productive, or is it just me, and where does that show?
Yes.
And and to me that's kind of where the movie was, because The Immigrant is kind of, it's straightforward. He's in sort of this place where he needs, he's in a, you know, position where he needs to survive and needs to like get to work because he's in a new place and stuff like that. But Modern Times, this is like, it starts out, this is the set, this is what is kind of going on, and now we got to work our way out of it. It's not like he's on a ship, but then he gets on.
And does he even work his way out of it by the end? What I thought was quite interesting about Modern Times, or both of these films, though, they don't definitively have a happy ending. They got through the day, right?
But there's still more to go. That's a good point.
And what's important is that they keep walking and they keep going.
Well, it's kind of like he always lands on his feet. Mm-hmm. Like, and you, at this point, you can just trust that he's gonna... Because this was supposed to be his last silent film. Oh, really? So, like, when he's leaving this, like, as the tramp forever. But then he comes back for The Great Dictator.
But why was it his... Was he, like, just done with it, or what? Or...
Well, at this point, silent cinema was just a thing of the past. Like, it was very risky doing a silent film at this point, because basically everything was just talkies. So everyone was just saying it was really stupid, and then, like, there was a big... People felt very conflicted that, like, he portrays this poor character, but he, you know, is one of the richest people in Hollywood. And then he also is conflicted by the fact that, like, he knows what it's like to be poor. He has all this money. What can he do? All he can do is make a film about it.
Yeah.
And then he makes the film.
With zero sense of pretension about it, which is what's very cool about it. So many other, I think any other film, well, a lot of filmmakers tend to overplay the message or be over sentimental. Well, it is very sentimental, but it is in a way that it feels very genuine and doesn't sugarcoat the fact that times are hard and you just gotta keep trying. What are you gonna do? You just gotta put another foot, like, take another step, move forward. And that's represented by both of them. I feel like both him and the girl, they both embody that sense, the scrappiness of like, no, I'm a survivor. I will get through this day. I will get myself a house. I will make the best out of my situation, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was very inspiring. And also just the filmmaking itself is excellent. His performances, everybody's performances. The little gags that he does, oh my god, I can't believe how many jokes this guy can come up with and mine out of like a very simple situation. Like the immigrant with him just trying to get out of the bill. Incredible. There's like five different setups and five different things that happen. And with Modern Times, it's just there's that amazing, not supermarket, shopping mall. The shopping mall sequence with him like rollerblading. And then is the fact that he sings nonsense during that restaurant supposed to be like a dig at the talkies? Like, oh, when's he gonna start talking? The moment when he does talk is absolutely, it's just gibberish.
Well, I think that's more like he just didn't want to let go of this universalism.
Mm-hmm.
And then he can make a song. You gather what the song is talking about. And then you don't need to have the words to it. So then it's still universal. But I think it would ruin it, though, if he spoke. Because, like, I'm pretty sure in The Great Dictator, the first time he speaks is, like, the famous speech. Which is, like...
Machine heart, machine man. Yeah.
It's great. We'll do that one day.
We'll do that one day. We'll
go back to it. Along with The Dictator, right?
Oh, yes. Sacha Baron Cohen's a seminal masterpiece.
Yep.
You're both equally important.
Remember that scene in that where a woman's giving birth and he accidentally loses his phone in their vagina?
Oh my god.
He's trying to get the baby out. And then there's a call and he has to put his
oh yeah. And then him and Anna Faris like bond and hold hands inside that woman's vagina. You know, that movie's actually pretty good. Yeah, there's some pretty good gags in there. You think if Chaplin saw this, he'll go like, you know, this guy, Sacha Baron, he's alright. He's got what... I think he would. For what it is. I think he'd appreciate Borat.
I hope so. But I don't know. I like seeing the difference of like, because there's so much like elegance in his later films. Like everything is so perfectly choreographed. But then in his shorts, it's more kind of sloppy. It's not as good. Doesn't always land. But it's so interesting to see how, like, it all started, and you essentially get to see the entire progression of, like, his ideas of how they came about, just because he had to do so many of them really quickly.
Mm.
I think that's fun.
It doesn't... In The Immigrant, he doesn't even feel like the tramp yet. He kind of just... Because I guess because he looks so much younger. He's a bit more aggressive, he's a bit scruffier, and he's not as, like, refined, but, like, in... modern times, he is the character. Mm. You can't really see him as absolute as anything else. I love the way he smiles. There's a very like not sly, but like sense, like I don't know what the adjective is. The way he smiles and kind of like looks up at the camera, it's
like engaging with you.
Yeah,
it's like pleading with you to feel this thing with him.
Hmm. Good contrast to like Buster Keaton that we saw the other day, when he doesn't, the whole gist is that he doesn't emote that much.
Because he's the great stoner face.
That's what I mean. Wait, so he married the girl in modern times?
Yeah, Paulette Goddard. They got married. And that, I think that was his last wife before he married Una, which is his last final wife.
Wow.
Mm.
But the original ending I've read was that he goes mad in modern times and he's visited by a nun, but they thought that was too dark, so he's so they switched it for this more hopeful ending, Arvin. So there you go. There's this.
I see. It could, yes, because even then I was like, oh yeah, they don't walk away. They don't win. They don't win anything. They're still out of a job. They're back to where they're
better
started.
Than him going insane. Yeah. That's well. Yeah, another thing, Michelle. Do you know, like, did the modern times do well? I guess it had to have for him to make The Great Dictator. But like in that environment, did it like make enough of a splash that it was like, oh, he still got it or no?
Actually, I'm not entirely sure how he did when it first came out. I'm looking at Wikipedia.
So this could be like one of the cases where we look back at it as being...
It says it was the most popular film at the British box office when it came out. But I think this is like, people know this film more than any other. Mm-hmm. I'd say like either this or City Lights or like the Chaplin films. If you know any, it's going to be one of them.
Like I've seen, this is my first Chaplin. Modern times, like I watched this in history class because we were learning about the Great Depression. I would say, like, if it must have resonated very deeply with the American audience, coming because in 19 the Depression kicked in 28.
Yeah,
I believe in 28. Like it's been some time. They're just coming out of it. I feel like this embodies a lot of that anxiety of like, where are we even? Like where's like, is there even a place for us in this modern world? With like in this world of machines, but and he's defiantly saying yes, like even if it like rejects you and it kicks you out and churns you in and like spits you out, you can still keep going.
Yeah,
and I thought that was very very
well. It is inspiring, but you know what's a few interesting you know facts here. It was inspiring also for Jean-Paul Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir, and. I don't know how to pronounce Maurice Merleau-Ponty named their journal after it, so they they found it.
The Existentialist.
Yeah, and Graham Greene, the novelist, writing for The Spectator in 1936, said that he praised the film, loved it, but said that his previous works had like. A dated feel, and that this one with it, he entered the contemporary scene. So it kind of, I mean, I get what he means, but at the same time, I don't. But it kind of like hit, I guess, a lot of people.
Well, but probably because it's so political. What with the involvement of him being like, here's the communist rally, not even just being a communist, but for like unionizing, for the like the it's so pointed towards the fact that industrialization is turning men into cogs, like in this like mechanical mess. Yeah.
I also think that it probably provided a lot of people with like remembering like happier times when you know there wasn't a Great Depression going on and they could go to the cinema and watch a Chaplin film and it would be fun. Even though there's like this political message to it, it's still fun. Like it just blows my mind how we can tackle something that's really depressing but like not make fun of it, not like just, I don't know, be really simple with it. And still, he makes it funny, but he's also addressing the issue at the same time. This is like in, what's it called, A Shoulder to Arms, where he does the whole, all of it is set in a trench in World War One. And I do not know how he doesn't make fun of it. He doesn't like play down the horrors of it, but he still makes it funny without doing that. Insane.
Well, because he's never, the gag is always on him, I think. It's always him performing the gag. He's never mean spirit towards anybody else.
He's
Well, they're villains. Well, they're not really that much of villains.
Other than the fact that he makes fun of cops, which, I mean, whatever. That's fantastic. Of course he would.
Well, you know who didn't love this movie as much as Michelle was Nazi Germany propaganda
Hitler.
minister Joseph Goebbels. Yeah,
Joseph
he
Goebbels.
banned the
Oh
film
no, not a big
from
fan.
being shown in the regime because of its alleged advocacy of communism. Yeah, so this was like,
Didn't really, didn't, I can see that why they wouldn't vibe
but
with him.
I get what you mean though. Like, he doesn't, he's never like cynical, but at the same time, it's not like, you know, simple-minded optimism. It's like, it's a very fine line that he walks where he makes these like really difficult subjects entertaining and also not just like, oh, this is what I mean and this is right and this is wrong. It's like, I don't know, it's a weird, it's not weird, but it's like a definitely a really amazing skill.
I wouldn't even call this like a left, like
Yeah,
politically
neither would I.
left-leaning film, because it's so accessible. Like anybody can, I think anybody, regardless of like your political affiliation, can watch this and understand like what he's trying to get across. Yeah. Okay. Shall we take a break? We take break. We be right back. We're back. Now step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Seven reels, seven reels. Let's hand them out. Michelle, this was your pick this month. Like this week.
I forgot we had to rate them.
You have to rate them.
I don't want to rate them.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah,
Pull a
this is
gun
a
to your
hard
head.
one.
It's like,
I guess four modern times, three the immigrant.
I will give out the same rating because I love the instrument, like the orchestration of "Smile" through Modern Times. It cues in at such beautiful moments, and it's great. I love it so much. Just a little bit more.
Yeah, it's this is so hard. I mean, I like both of them for different reasons, but I'm gonna go with For the Immigrant, Three Modern Times because I just kind of, I don't know. I like the gags that were like kind of just purely comedy. I not that they're political. See, this is so hard because the other one has like its merits on its own, but yeah, whatever. My own preference is that. Yeah, so.
Exactly. It's your rating.
So it's, yeah,
All
four
right.
and three.
Which brings us to what we've watched this week.
Do you want me to go first?
You go first. Go first.
So I rewatched The Great Beauty.
Sorrentino.
Yeah, and I don't know why, I just found it on Criterion. I was like, oh, I haven't seen this in a while. I want to watch it again. And
How was it?
boy, it's great. It's really good. It starts out with this like really crazy nightclub scene where they're dancing. And I it's beautiful and funny and at times like a bit cringy because they're trying really hard to make him really cool. But
Have you gotten to the new Pope yet?
No, not yet. This is part of the reason why I watched it, because I wanted to watch The New Pope, but then I was like, oh, it's so much time. And then I just put this on.
You should watch his new film too. That's good.
Hand of What's God?
The... Oh,
It's on
yeah,
Netflix.
okay.
Because
Yeah,
ignore the
okay.
marketing that is all about football, because it's not. It's like
Oh, all right.
background about football.
It's like Roma,
Because I
but
wouldn't
good.
enjoy it.
Ah, okay. All right. I'll watch that one as well. So it's good, yeah. So I'll watch the other one.
Excellent. We watched The Northman. The Northman. The Northman. The new Robert Eggers film, The Viking Saga. It's. I loved a lot of it. Like a lot of it, but I just don't think it really came together as a. You know how The Lighthouse feels so cohesive? Like from start to finish, it's so singular of this guy's vision from like it's executed to perfection. From the performances to the set, the music and everything. You still get elements of that here, but not even I feel like the cinematography in this is a lot less controlled and precise compared to what you see in like The Witch and The Lighthouse. The performances are still great, even though the marketing heavily emphasizes these actors who actually aren't really in the movie for Ethan Hawke is in it for 5 minutes. Willem Dafoe even less. Bjork shows up for 30 seconds in one scene, and I'm like, okay, like you guys are on a poster. Whatever, whatever, it's fine. The true MVP of this movie is actually Nicole Kidman, who had to like do the. She has the most interesting role, and she actually has, and she gave the best performance in my opinion. But overall, it's the most. If you're afraid to show like friends and family like The Lighthouse or The Witch, this is the best. This is his most conventional. And most easily digestible. People will still say, "Oh, it's so weird." It's not weird enough. It's not, and but my problem is that it's not weird enough. It's not as cerebral and impenetrable, which is what I liked about his previous movies. And
Well, I mean, I gotta tell you though, I'm kind of glad because I really like the guy, and I also think like more people should check him out. So this is
yeah,
kind
this is
of
a
like you
perfect entry
should.
point. This is perfect, like for people to come in. The closest parallel is probably something like The Revenant, but just a tad more going on in terms of like the mythos, and it's a bit more immersive in terms of the Viking culture and everything. Did we watch anything else? We're almost done with Severance.
Oh yeah.
It's picking up.
Okay.
You're right. You're absolutely right. It does pick up after like I was like, oh, okay, now things are actually starting to happen. One thing that things actually start happening, it gets really, really, really good. Adam Scott is so good. I
Yeah,
can't,
he's
like, he's amazing in this. His performance is so great.
It's insane because sometimes he looks like a, you know, like an action star, and then other times he's just like looks like this regular like
Guy.
average guy. Yeah. So
And
it's
he
really
plays both
weird.
so pretty well.
Yeah.
And John Turturro, this is, oh, and I loved him in this.
And what's his name? Christopher
Christopher
Walken.
Walken? Oh, so
He's so good
fantastic.
in this, yeah, as well.
He can never play anybody else but Christopher Walken, but this is some good Christopher
Yeah,
Walken
I
right here.
heard Ben Affleck talk about how like he's aware that, you know, people have to when he gets a role, people have to kind of adjust it as like his voice. So it's
Cool. Okay, what are our recommendations, Michelle?
I'm gonna do two.
Okay.
One is if you want similar political from Chaplin, Great Dictator, pretty great one. If you want something nice and light, then A Dog's Life, which is a short from 1919, which is very sweet. It's when he befriends a dog, and it's so sweet, made me cry.
Oh.
Yeah.
But speaking of dogs, the best part of The Northman was when Ethan Hawke gets on all fours and acts like a dog and literally like becomes a dog because that's kind of part of the ritual that they go through. Sorry, just need to bring that up. It's
Oh
fantastic.
God, I can't wait
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I was living it up in the theater when he was doing that. I was so happy. Yeah. My recommendation is Metropolis,
Fritz
also
Lang.
by Fritz Lang. Also a black and white film. Well, sorry, made during earlier?
Earlier,
Earlier, or
yeah.
actually much earlier, I believe.
27, I
20,
think.
yeah, much earlier. That also deals with the mechanization, the industrialization of humanity. We're all turning into pigs for this one great machine. Ah, what a world.
Also made by Fritz Lang's, well, the book was written by Fritz Lang's, I think, wife at the time, who then went on to be a Nazi, like, filmographer who made.
Awesome.
Helped do like Triumph of the Will and stuff like that. That's fun. But then he divorced her when, you know, the Nazis took power and he ran away to Hollywood.
I was like, oh no, you're okay. Sorry, honey. This ain't gonna work out.
Mm-hmm.
What would your recommendation be, Yusuf?
Oh, yeah, so my recommendation would be The Wrestler. It seems a bit odd.
The Aronofsky?
But, yeah, but awesome. I think it's a good one to watch after modern times. It's kind of like, you know, that kind of... Because it kind of highlights, especially recently, the stuff that's come out about the WWE and how it treats its, like, performers. It reminded me of how that, like, factory was run, basically. It's just like, okay, you gotta just do your best. And then they kind of, like, take their work home with them. You know, remember that scene where he was, like, just bolted, like, trying to twist everything into the...
Yes.
Yeah, it just felt like that. The Wrestler just felt to me like this guy continuing.
They should make a film about like the horror. They should make a horror film, well, much like The Wrestler, about how the Disney child actor industry like churns out these poor people.
Oh yeah.
It's like they won't get, this won't get funded, but they should do that because it can be you. I think you'll be just as good. All right.
Cool idea.
So, for next week, we're going to have a very, very special guest, and it's going to be our friend Rachel. She is recommending that we watch just one film, but once you know what this film is, you're going to realize it's a bit of work. It's going to be Lars von Trier's Melancholia, starring Kirsten Dunst, and I believe Keith Sutherland's in it. It's excellent, but also very, very depressing, and I can't wait to talk about it. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, and keep it real.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Hi.
The 730 is hosted by Arvin Huang, Michelle Hassel, and Yusuf Al-Bashir. Logo by Joe Conti. Our ad break music is composed by Yusuf Sui Lim, and our outro music is composed by Yahya Al-Bashir. Thanks for listening.